Oh,
not used to it. But you look very good up there. Yeah, it was. It's been a wonderful, wonderful day, and I really do just thank each and every one of you, not only for the welcome that I've received here and the hospitality and the love, but so many of you who have said that you've been praying for Lolly and myself and some of the trials and things that we've been going through as a family. We feel your prayers, and it's really, really a blessing to be able to come back and tell you personally how much that means to Lolly. She really wanted me to let you know. And I haven't told you yet about being invited to come back at through the pig roast. She doesn't eat pig, but she doesn't eat any kind of pork. But I'm sure Christine will bring some nice smoothies, and we'll have some nice kale and ginger and some nice smoothies. Yeah, yep. Yesterday, when Pastor was asking, trying to get a sense of, what I was going to be talking about, I said one thing. I said, "Yeah, I think that maybe I'd like to share share about something that is dear to me, and it's kind of like what you were talking on the interview. What does it feel like, to be able to wear this, the Medal of Honor?" And I was thinking about sharing about that, but then yesterday, Pastor and I had a conversation. And ever since that conversation, the Lord's just been really laying on my heart another message that I have not preached and I have not shared, I think, since the last time I was here. And I think it was in the evening service that I shared this particular message. But what Pastor and I were talking about, I'm not sure how we got talking about it, but I mentioned a very good friend of mine. Actually, he was a man of God who had a tremendous, tremendous ministry. Literally led thousands to the Lord back in the 70s when the Jesus movement was taking place in New England. His name was Clinton White, and he had written a booklet that was used all around the world called "How to Be the Day the King's Son Died," or "How to Be Born Again." Clinton was a very, very good friend of mine. And matter of fact, he married my wife and I. Tremendous, tremendous man of God, a tremendous soldier in the Lord's army. Matter of fact, I was at his seminary when I was notified that I was being awarded the Medal of Honor. And I remember Clinton giving me up into his office, and he just wanted to, he said, "I had no idea that you were that kind of a person." And I said, "I'm not. I'm not that kind." Because I had my hair down to about here, I had spent 2 years living in a cave, and I was still living in the cave when I was going to seminary. But Clinton and I developed a tremendous, tremendous friendship. And he was a vet from the Korean War. And it turned out, I think, that Pastor, you had a friend or something that came to the Lord through some of his literature. And he didn't know this. I said, Clinton may have been a tremendous soldier of the Lord, but he died a terrible, terrible, tragic death. I'm not sure what caused it, but he became a casualty of the war, the spiritual war, which we are engaged in. And he ended up dying a very terrible death, alone, left his family. He died down in Florida from a rented trailer in a trailer park, surrounded by drugs, with a pistol by his hand. And Pastor said something to me that really struck me. He said, "That's not the way that a soldier should die. That's not the way that his story should end, is it?" And the more I thought about that, the more I kept on going back to a message that God gave me quite a few years ago about becoming a casualty of war. I get, especially when I'm around guys, they're fascinated with war. Maybe it's a guy thing, but they just want to know all the specifics about war. Maybe it's a rite of passage that we all go through. Maybe it's, this question that we have inside of us. What would I do if this happened or in this situation? It's funny, but my daughter She was sharing that she was, that even in church, these strange thoughts. She said, "You know, Dad, maybe it's the upbringing that you had, but I have these strange thoughts." And she said, "I was sitting there one day and I was just imagining, suppose the guy behind me right there pulled out a gun and shot the pastor." And she said, "I'm scheming in my mind how I would react." And she said, "I think I could take him out." You know, and you know, she's I guess I trained her or something, I don't know, but she's, that there's this fascination with war, you know, and there's the preparation that those who are trained to go off to war go through. You know, we learn about the different skills. They build up our confidence and give us opportunities to implement all these skills and to expect the unexpected. We're trained that the only constant in any situation is you and your buddy. So count on you and count on your buddy. Know what you're going to do. Know what your buddy's going to do in every situation, because he is your battle buddy. But there is this side of war that's not so fascinating, because every war has casualties. And there's some tremendous, tremendous tragedies. And the thoughts that I want to share with you this afternoon are thoughts that came to my mind when I reflected upon the 10 months that I spent in the hospital as a casualty of war. 10 months spent at hospital in Vietnam, then Japan, and then at Valley Forge. 10 months of lying there and just thinking. The only thing that I could really do regarding the war, because I was being bothered. I mean, here I was a professional. I was a professional soldier. It's what I've been trained to do. And here were my buddies, because I was able to get newspaper articles, because our camp was surrounded for over a month. And every day I would read through the Stars and Stripes. I would read about, because it was big news back in 1970. It was one of the biggest battles. It was on a par with Khe Sanh. And every day I would just read about more men that would have been killed and the new offenses that they had taken place. And it tore me apart. I felt so much anger. I felt so much hurt. I felt so much guilt, because that's where I should be. I'm a casualty of war, but I'm a professional. I should be in the war. That's my duty. Those are my buddies. I had to live with guilt for a long time about not being able to be there with them. It's where I was supposed to be. I felt like I was letting them down. And that's not a fun thing to think about and to think about when you're lying wounded, trying to heal. I had mentioned earlier in this morning's service about that John Eldridge had given a quote, and that quote was that until we as Christians come to terms with the fact that we live our lives in the context of war, we are going to misinterpret or misunderstand 90% of what happens to us in life. And I really believe that. And the reason I came up with this message was is that because just as I was a casualty of the Vietnam War, we as Christians are involved in a spiritual war, a spiritual battle. And my concern is that just as I was lying there in a hospital bed, and I can only read about the war that was going on, there are many, many, too many Christians that are just reading about, you know, the way things are in a society. You could listen to the congressman and you know, he was talking about that fire, to go out and with the fire and the passion that you have, do battle, because it's a war out there. And my concern is that there's many Christians that are just laying around and reading about the war that's going on. And because it doesn't directly affect them, you know, it's really not really a part of my life. It hasn't touched me yet. Or my other concern regarding the spiritual battle that we are going through as Christians is that, like my friend Clinton, if we're not prepared, if we're not careful, we can become a casualty. And that's not the way that the story of a soldier for Christ should end, to become a casualty. So, as usual, I got three things. You know, it's one of the basic things you learn in Bible college. 3 points in a poem. You know, that's about the outline of a message. But I got three things that, and actually I think these are the top three things that I have thought about, that I experienced, not so much in my 10 months as a casualty lying in the hospital, but these are things that I've experienced in my life as a Christian that have made me a casualty, because I've experienced all these things in my life. They have made me a casualty of war, and they've undermined my ability to be effective in the battle. They have hurt me, they have wounded me, and they have made me an ineffective warrior for Christ. So I want to share these as a caution to you to be careful about these things and how they may affect your life and affect your ability to battle. Don't let these things undermine your ability to be a soldier for Christ. And we all are soldiers for Christ. The first thing is pride. My gosh, it's the root of a lot of problems. We were talking yesterday, Pastor and I, and we said, you know, foundation at the root cause of a lot of the problems is just pride in us. And one day I was reading, as I was kind of struggling with, okay, God, what are you going to do with my life? You know, I'm in this dry spell. You know, I came across this verse, and it really spoke to me. Isaiah 49, verse 2. Where Isaiah says, "And he hath made my mouth like a sharp sword." And I said, yeah, I've had 3 years of seminary. My mouth is like a sharp sword. You know, I can take the word of God and I can go through and I can really do some good things for God by cutting people up. Yeah, he's made my mouth a sharp sword. But what comes after that? In the shadow of his hand hath he hid me. What? God, I'm a sharp sword. Take me out. Use me. In the shadow of his hand has he hid you. There was a time in my life, my Christian life, when I was hid for a long time. And I wasn't just hid because I was living 2 years in a cave trying to sort out my life together. God put me through some times where I was hid. He has made my mouth like a sharp sword, and he has hid me in the shadow of his hand. And he has made me a polished shaft. I love archery. I don't hunt, but I love target practice with rifles and archery and stuff. And I just, you know, you take that nice polished shaft, you know, and I have about a 31, I think I have a 31-inch arrow. That's what my draw span is. 30, you know, take that nice polished shaft with a nice sharp point on it, and, you know, it's straight, it flies true. Just waiting to be put into God's bow. And okay, God, shoot me where you want me. Maybe I could go back. I was planning on going back to Vietnam as a missionary. You spent 23 years in Peru. That was my desire when I first came to Christ. I'm going to go back to Vietnam and be a missionary. I had interviewed with the Christian Missionary Alliance. I was telling Pastor this, that the man who was in charge of the Vietnam missions, his name was Tom Stebbins at the time, and he came all the way up to northern New Hampshire because in all the years that missionaries had been to Vietnam and working with the Mountain Yards, in all the years that CMA or Wycliffe Bible Translators had been working with the Mountain Yards, the jungle people of Vietnam, there was only one tribe that they had never reached, the Sadang, and that was the tribe that I worked with. That was the tribe where I developed friendships with. That was the tribe where men and women died for me because of the love that we had. I was so excited about being able to go back to Vietnam and share with the Sadang. You have made me a polished shaft, Lord, but then in his quiver has he hid me. Vietnam fell, and all of a sudden, I'm in God's quiver. Pride really started to work. That verse really speaks to me about pride. He's made my mouth a sharp sword, but he's hid me in the shadow of his hand. He's made me a polished shaft, but he's put me in the quiver. pride starts working in your life and you start to say, you know, why? You know, come on, God. I shared in the Bible study this morning that Dick Couch, who is a friend of mine who trained SEALs, he tries to instill in the men there the attitude, the motivation, the value of what can I do to make you look better? That is the total antithesis of what pride is. What can I do to make you look better? It's not important how people see me. I don't need to be number one. I'm okay with being number 999. All I'm interested in is what can I do to make you look better? That's the opposite of pride. But pride was really acting up in me. And it caused me to be a casualty for a while. I'm sure that part of the reason that God kept me in the quiver as long as he did was because I kept on saying, you know, God, you know, this is not the best use of my talents, God. You know, I'm getting kind of bored sitting here in the quiver. You know, I got this nice sharp mouth. I've been trained. I could be doing some great things for you, God. Why are you hiding me here? God said, You're not ready. You got some learning to do, Gary. But God, it's not the most effective use, you know, of me. You're not ready, Gary. God, I think you've made a mistake. You know, I think I could really be used here or here. You know how pride speaks. You can fill in the blanks for how pride may have come across your lips or come from your heart at some point in time. But I've learned some things that I think God wanted me to learn about pride. One is that, Gary, I do have a plan for you. And I want you to know, Gary, that in my plan, there is no insignificant job. No matter where you are, Gary, it's where I want you at this particular time. There is nothing that's insignificant. So you think you're not being used most effectively? Wrong. You just haven't learned how to be used by me where you are right now. God does not make mistakes. And there is no insignificant job that God has for us anywhere. He has us where he wants us. Where you find yourself, stay focused. You know, listen, pray, and love while you are right where you are. There is no significant job. Second thing I learned about pride was shared with and taught to me by the man that led me to the Lord. His name was Buck. After I received the Medal of Honor, he came up from Massachusetts to take me out for coffee, and he said, Gary, I got some advice for you. He said, Gary, if God has called you to be a servant, don't stoop to be a king. If God's called you to be a servant, Gary, and I know he has, don't stoop. Don't lower yourself. Don't lower your expectations. Don't lower anything about you to the point where you would allow yourself to be a king or elevated in man's eyes. There's no greater place to be than where God wants you. And he has called us to be servants. Gary, if God has called you to be a servant, then don't stoop to be a king. Don't complain about where he's got you, Gary. He took me out to the woodshed because I was complaining to him. Yeah. And he did some exhortation and rebuking about complaining about where you are. He said, you are where God wants you, Gary. Right where you are, draw close to him. Pray, worship, love, be still. And you will see him where you are. And you will experience things, and if you draw close to him, you will experience things in the fellowship you have with him right where you are that you would never have experienced if you were anywhere else. That's why he's got you where he has you, because he has some special type of communion that he wants with you, heart to heart with God. So don't complain about where you are. Don't stoop to be a king, Gary, because he was worried that with this, I might get elevated in my own estimation of who I am and why I wear this. Third thing I learned about pride is that wherever you are, you've got opportunities that you'll never have anywhere else. And close to that is, don't be deceived. If you're not doing it where you are, you're not going to do it if you're somewhere else. I always, you know, for a while I was really bummed out because Vietnam fell and I couldn't go back. So I went in this big depression and said, oh, well, you know, I guess I can't do anything. I forgot there's all kinds of people around me that I have contact with. And if I wasn't going to love them, serve them, minister to them where I was, what makes me think I was going to do it somewhere in Vietnam? Don't be deceived. If you're not doing it here, you're not going to do it there. And what's an antidote to pride? Humility. Just looking to Jesus. Keep your eyes on Jesus, and that will keep you from being prideful in your own heart. It'll keep you from thinking that, God, you made me a sharp sword. Don't hide me in your hand. I'm a great arrow, Lord. Put me in your bow. Shoot me. Nope, he's going to hide you in your quiver. Keep your eyes on Jesus and serve him, love him, worship him, and love others right where you are. I was telling Pastor that as a church, we have worked on developing a mission statement, and we got a very simple mission statement. And I rehearse that in my own mind every day. It's a very simple mission statement. Okay, today my feet hit the ground. This is my mission. Love God. Love people. Serve others. Tell everyone. That's my mission. Those are my marching orders. You know, my feet hit the ground in the morning. I love God. I love people. I serve anyone, everyone, and I tell everyone about the hope that's in Christ. Don't let pride keep you from fulfilling that mission that God has called you to. Second thing that will undermine your ability and make you a casualty of war is fear. I've got to be very honest with you. This year, working with my last year of middle school, every morning I struggled with fear, and I could never figure out why I was so fearful. But it was like sometimes I was just immobilized by the fear. And I'm thinking, what can 6th, 7th, and 8th graders do to me? You know. But I was immobilized by fear. Every morning I would have to go down by the water, and I would stay there for 30 minutes praying up and reading and getting psyched, because I was afraid to go into the classrooms. It was that FUD factor that was really operating: fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And I started to rehearse with myself because I knew that fear was incapacitating me and immobilizing me. And I started to realize and started to rehearse with myself some of the things that I had learned about fear and what combats fear. Because what, as I shared in the morning message, you know, what works in battle, what you learn in training works in battle. And when fear starts to get into your life, the first thing that happens is doubt. Once doubt starts operating in your life, you start doubting your skills, you start doubting your abilities, you start doubting your mission, you start doubting God's faithfulness in your life, his ability to use you. Once those things start to happen, the next thing that comes along in this progression is panic. And then you start making mistakes. Right behind panic is mistakes. So that's the progression of fear. Fear creates doubt. Doubt creates panic. Panic creates mistakes that are made. And all of a sudden, you find yourself ineffective. You find yourself open to being wounded by the enemy. And you find yourself a casualty of war because of fear. One of the things I told myself to try to combat this fear was, I said, okay, if I'm going to fear anything, God tells me to fear him, you know, fear God. And there was a quote that I had once that said, you know, if the remarkable thing about fearing God is that if you fear God, you will fear nothing else. But if you do not fear God, you will fear everything else. So if I'm going to fear, I need to be able to get myself focused on fearing God, because that's the beginning of wisdom, the beginning of knowledge. And God also, as I was this past year trying to battle with fear, God gave me some other verses that really ministered to me. 2 Timothy 1:7, he said, Gary, I haven't given you the spirit of fear, but of love and of power and of a sound mind. Arm yourself with that promise, Gary. You don't have the spirit of fear in you. If there's fear there, that's not from my spirit. I've given you the power, the spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. Rest in this, Gary. 1 John 4:18, he said, Gary, if you're starting to fear, then there's something lacking. You're not made perfect in my love. It's time to draw back into my word. It's time to become more mature, more perfect in love, Gary. Bathe yourself in the fact that I love you. You have nothing to fear, because he that fears is not made perfect in love. But the greatest verse that came to me, that was ministered to me, was what Paul said in 2 Corinthians 1:9. When Paul said, we got the perfect antidote for fear. He said, we just carried the sentence of death in ourselves. You know? We carried the sentence of death in ourselves. You can't hurt a dead man. You know? So I'm already dead. I'm crucified with Christ. So what have I got to fear? You know, what's the worst you can do to me? Nothing. Because I'm already dead. We carried the sentence of death in ourselves. We decided not to trust in ourselves, but in God who raises the dead. 2 Corinthians 1:9 was a tremendous comfort to me as I tried to battle fear this past year. I can't tell you the number of times I was standing in a classroom, and as I'm starting to get some of the abuse from 7th, 8th graders especially, I'd say, okay, don't react. You're already dead, Gary. You know, they can't hurt a dead man. Third, final thing that will undermine your ability to be an effective warrior, soldier for Christ. Unfaithfulness. I think this is what prompted Pastor and I to start talking, because we were talking about the generation that's coming up and what we as responsibility of this generation have to pass on to the younger generation. Because I see some things in my own kids. You know, there's just some things that I would love to have them be faithful in that they're not doing. It's whether they don't think it's important enough or what. But unfaithfulness is something that will immediately cause you to be a casualty of war. And what's the source of unfaithfulness? Well, I have one verse that was that I had down, Proverbs 25:19, and confidence in an unfaithful man is like a broken tooth. And Pastor and I were talking, you know, when you get a tooth that is hurting you and you're in pain, your whole focus goes to this little small little thing that's in, you know, it's only a small little thing, but my gosh, the pain that small little thing can cause. Well, Proverbs says, confidence in an unfaithful man is like a broken tooth. You want to cause somebody a lot of pain? Put your confidence in somebody who's unfaithful. Depend on somebody who's not dependable. Trust somebody who has already shown themselves that they're not trustworthy, that you can't count on them. You'll end up like you're in a lot of pain, like you have a broken tooth. Don't put your confidence in somebody who is unfaithful. But more importantly, let us, by God's grace and by his strength, not be unfaithful to what he's called us to. And one of the biggest sources that I believe leads to unfaithfulness is apathy. It's good enough. You know? It's just good enough. I was talking to the youth pastor. You know, he said that's one of the things that really, I don't want to share any of his secrets, but he said, you know, you sometimes wonder when you're in ministry, am I doing enough? Am I doing enough? Well, as soon as somebody tells me that that's something that's inside of them, immediately I have to tell myself, don't have to worry about apathy with that person. There is no apathetic attitude in that person. Their heart does not harbor any kind of apathy. Because apathy says, that's good enough. Somebody once told me that when I was putting on my greens, even before I got my beret on, he said, you must be a green beret. I said, yeah, how'd I know? And he said, I'm watching the way you laced your shoes, your boots up. And I watched that you tucked the ends of your boot, of the shoelaces, in behind your creases in a certain way. Because the airborne teachers of that, huh? I said, yeah. Apathy would have just said, well, I got it up here, I tied it, leave the bows hanging out, things are all over the place. Apathy in your life, just doing things to be good enough, will lead to unfaithfulness. It'll progress into unfaithfulness. Apathy is the root of unfaithfulness. And I've written down here and got it starred and everything. So if faithfulness is something that's very important, then please don't confuse faithfulness with performance. You can tell the difference with somebody who is just going through an act. You know, they've got all the things that people are expecting them to do, and so they go ahead and they do it. I've worked with a lot of people like that. You know, their evaluations are letter perfect because they do all the little right things that they're supposed to do. But my gosh, their heart is so bad. Some of those people that I worked with don't even like kids. And I said, what are you doing working with middle schoolers? You don't like kids, I can tell. But they get glowing evaluations because they know what their boss wants and they do it. So don't confuse faithfulness in your life with just performing. There's a big, big difference. And a way to check yourself on that is, are you faithful when no one's watching? This is where the poem part comes in. Because I want to read you something that I read, I think the last time I was here, but some of you weren't here. But this is an article. It's an article that I came across, but it illustrates faithfulness as opposed to performance in a way that I can't think of a better way to talk about it and to acknowledge what faithfulness really means. And Pastor, he didn't know I was going to be talking on this, but he mentioned Arlington and the Tomb of the Unknown Soldiers. There is just something awe-inspiring about Arlington. But then there's something that is tremendously inspiring about watching those soldiers who guard the tomb. It's not a show for them. They are faithful to their duty. And this was an article that I found in a paper that was written, and it's quite a few years ago now. It's a couple hurricanes ago. This was when Hurricane Isabel came through. And this was the newspaper article. It says that the 3rd Infantry Regiment at Fort Myers has the responsibility of providing ceremonial units and honor guards for state occasions. Also, White House functions, public celebration, and interments at Arlington National Cemetery. And also, they stand a very formal sentry watch at the Tomb of the Unknown Soldier. The public is familiar with the precision of what is called walking post at the tomb. And that's what Pastor talked about. You can set your watch by what they do, the 13 steps, holding for seconds, and then going the other way. And they do change every 30 minutes. The public's familiar with that precision of what's called walking post at the tomb. There are roped-off galleries where visitors can form to observe the troopers and their measured step and this almost mechanical silent rifle shoulder changes. They are relieved every 30 minutes in a very formal drill that has to be seen to believe. Some people think that when the cemetery is closed to the public in the evening, that the show stops. Uh-uh. First, to the men who are dedicated to this work, it's no show. It's a charge of honor. The formality and the precision continues uninterrupted all night. During the nighttime, the drill of relief and the measured step of the men on duty sentry remain unchanged from the daylight hours. To these men, these special men, the continuity of this post is the key to the honor and respect shown to the honored dead, who are symbolic of all American unaccounted for and all American combat dead. The steady rhythmic step in rain, sleet, and snow, hail, heat, cold, bitter cold, goes uninterrupted. Uninterrupted is the important part of this honor that's shown. Last night, while you were sleeping, the teeth of Hurricane Isabel came through this area and tore up everything. It was reported that there were thousands of trees down, power outages, traffic signals out, roads filled with downed limbs. It was reported that there was flooding, and the place looks like it has been hit, had been the impact area of an offshore bombardment. The regimental commander of the 3rd Infantry sent word to the nighttime sentry to secure the post and seek shelter from the high winds to ensure their personal safety. Those sentries disobeyed, said no way. During winds that turned over vehicles and turned debris into projectiles, the measured step continued. One fellow said, "I've got buddies getting shot at in Iraq who would kick my butt if word got to them that we let them down. I sure have no intention of spending my Army career being known as the idiot who couldn't stand a little light breeze and shirked his duty." Then he said something in response to the reporter's question regarding silly, purposeless, personal risks. Apparently the reporter asked him, "Why do you do this?" And the sentry said, "I wouldn't expect you to understand. It's a soldier thing. God bless this soldier. In a time of our nation's history, when spin and total lies seem to have become the accepted standard, there beats hearts that fully understand that devotion to duty is not a part-time occupation. It's not a performance. That tomb has been guarded every minute of every day since 1937. That's a lot of hours. It's a lot of minutes. 76 years now. Every minute of every day, of every hour, the honored dead have been honored by these men who have performed faithfully their duty. What a tremendous picture of a faithful soldier. 1 Timothy 6:12 says, "Fight the good fight of faith." For us, the soldiers, to fight the good fight of faith, I think that requires us to empty ourselves of arrogant pride that says, "I'm too good for this job." To fight the good fight of faith, I think it requires that we have an absence of fear in our life, and that fear is replaced in our heart and mind. A strong heart and a strong mind that has become steadfast and unmovable, that has become made perfect in the Word of God. To fight that good fight of faith, I think that we need to remove that apathetic attitude that can quickly erode into unfaithfulness and that produces excuses for a poorly done task that was entrusted to our care. If we want to fight the good fight of faith, we need to get rid of pride and fear and apathy that causes unfaithfulness. I want to just close by reading to you the Sentinel's Creed. Remember I said my mission statement is love God, love people, serve others, and tell everyone. This is their mission statement. This is their creed. Oh, that we as Christians would have a creed like this. That we would set our standards equal to something like this. To be equal with these soldiers who are a tremendous picture of faithfulness and commitment to duty. The Sentinel's Creed. My dedication to this sacred duty is total and wholehearted. In the responsibility bestowed on me, never will I falter. And with dignity and perseverance, my standard will remain perfection. Through the years of diligence and praise and the discomfort of the elements, I will walk my tour in humble reverence to the best of my ability. It is He who commands the respect. It is He that I protect. His bravery that made us so proud. Surrounded by well-meaning crowds by day, alone in the thoughtful peace of night, this soldier will in honored glory rest under my eternal vigilance. Quite a creed. If only we, as soldiers for Christ, could remain faithful to that standard of excellence, that standard of faithfulness. But the thing is, we don't really have to. We've got God's grace, and God just wants us to do what we the best we can. Don't let pride, don't let fear, don't let apathy and unfaithfulness create an inability in you to be effective for God and cause you to be a casualty, which will put you in the hospital for 10 months. It's not the way that a story of a soldier should end. May we all end our story looking forward to the words that Jesus would say, "Well done, thou good and faithful servant." Thank you for welcoming me back home. It's been a real blessing here, and it means a lot to Lolly to know the love and the prayers and the support that each of you have given to us. Thank you. I look forward to June and spending some time with you again. God bless you.
Let's have our ladies come to the end.